While most of us are tucked up in bed asleep, 4 million Australians are busy at work. Nurses, cleaners, ambos, security staff, delivery drivers, bakers. These night shift workers keep things running after dark, but they're mostly invisible if you're a 9-to-5er, and to policymakers too. So what does life look like when your work day is actually a work night? Well, researchers from the University of Melbourne's Night Shift Project have been exploring that question for the last few years, and they have some thoughts on how we can better design our towns and cities for those of us who work at night. Dr. Anna Edwards has been working on this Night Shift Project. She's a research fellow in urban studies at the University of Melbourne's Centre for Cities. Anna, have you ever been a shift worker yourself?
Well, I've done a lot of work in hospitality in the past, and I've also worked in shipping. So yes, I've done quite a bit of work at night, but more recently, I think kind of in the last 15 years, I've been generally a desk worker, so well, 9-to-5.
And so you've been looking at nighttime workers, though. What did you discover were the sort of unique challenges that maybe if you are at a desk all day, you're not really thinking about?
Yeah, so what's really interesting is that night workers are not, I suppose it's not a homogenous group. There's a whole heap of different people working out there at night. However, across all of the night workers, generally, a lot of them can feel kind of socially isolated. So you kind of miss out on things like kind of family dinners, social events, kind of family bedtimes are different. You might miss out on putting your kids to bed. It can feel kind of lonely or unsafe at times. Definitely kind of public transport is a huge issue. So actually how you get to work and back, kind of if you're working in really unsocial hours, quite often it's harder than it is during the daytime and during those normal 9-to-5 times. Yeah. And there's also kind of limited access to services at night. So things like kind of pharmacies, childcare, and even trying to get a coffee late into the night can be hard to find, and something that possibly a lot of night workers want. So yeah, there's a whole heap of challenges that night workers face. I think the other important aspect to kind of another really important unique challenge that they face are kind of the health risks, which you mentioned a little bit earlier as well. Yeah.
Talk to me about the health risks here.
Yeah, so I suppose shift work kind of disrupts the circadian rhythms. So there's a whole heap of kind of health risks that have been associated with night work. So, for example, higher incidences of heart disease, diabetes, fatigue-related accidents, and poor mental health. And I think it's really interesting because you realise actually that we've known this for a long time, and yet kind of many employees who are working at night don't receive training on how to manage sleep, how to kind of manage nutrition, etc., to support and try to kind of counteract some of these potential health risks. And employers are not given the advice that they need either to be able to support their employers.
So I think there's kind of... Yeah, so keep going.
Sorry. There's a big gap, I suppose, between kind of awareness and action. So we know kind of what affects people's health at night, but current kind of workplace culture and policies haven't caught up.
I do want to talk about the specifics of what would help. I also wanted to kind of reflect on the fact that not every night shift worker is a junior worker, but I think for a lot of us, or for a lot of people who are in that space, you're doing the unsociable hours. You're sort of sometimes paying your dues a bit in a job, or you're working in a role that maybe is a bit lower paid than the typical career, and perhaps you don't have as much power as an employee to sort of push back or to ask your manager for considerations that you might need.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are, as I mentioned, there's a whole heap of different people working at night. So there are people on very high salaries and then people on low salaries. But I think the kind of big concern is around people on lower salaries, kind of working in precarious work, such as kind of, for example, in the gig economy. But even if you're not in the gig economy, then actually, if you're working at night, quite often you don't get to, management don't see you doing the work. And so there's kind of fewer opportunities then to, I suppose, to be kind of recognised for the work that you're doing, but also to kind of to input into company policy and to get the support that you need.
So one of the things you've looked at is structural differences, things that we can do differently in the bigger picture, governments, urban planners, making cities safer. What have you seen?
So Across the world, we now know that there's more than 100 cities that have established kind of nighttime economy governance. So they have these things called nightmares, or nighttime economy managers, I think is a better better term. But
no, nightmare is perfect.
Nightmare. And yet, quite often, kind of these nightmares or kind of nighttime economy governance groups are really kind of focusing on that consumer economy, so kind of the nightlife in the city. However, we really need to start thinking about, you know, if we want wanting to activate our cities at night and create 24-hour cities, then we really need to be thinking about the people who are kind of underpinning those nighttime and 24-hour economies. I think in terms of urban planning, quite often we assume a kind of 9-to-5 city, and the planning is done by people who are working in 9-to-5 jobs. So we don't actually go out and see what is happening at night. I think that's a really important point, actually, is actually if we can kind of get urban planners, people who are planning cities and designing policies, to actually go out at night and see, you know, I'm not talking kind of, you know, 8 o'clock at night for dinner, but actually going out and kind of in during those early hours, middle of the night, to see kind of what it's like for some of those night workers. So I think there's a whole heap of stuff that can be done. Public transport and public transport timetables, as I mentioned, I think is a really important aspect of kind of planning our cities for night workers. You mentioned kind of, you know, there's people who are on lower salaries. If there is no public transport, then people have to then drive in, pay, you know, quite expensive car parking quite often, or get an Uber or rideshare taxi, which again is very expensive. And so actually it's very important for these people to be able to get around by public transport. And at the moment I suppose the public transport timetables don't reflect 24-hour needs. I think the other thing is with planning public transport is that we don't currently know how many night workers there are within each geography. So if you're looking kind of across the city, we might know that there's 4.1 million people, Australians, who regularly work at night, and that accounts for about 1 in 3 Australian workers, so it's quite widespread, but we don't know where the hotspots of those activities are, and we can assume, you know, around hospitals and kind of industrial precincts that operate at night, and nightlife districts, there might be kind of more night workers in those areas, but at the moment we don't collect that data, so we don't actually know. There's a huge amount of work still to be done.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor speaking with Dr. Anna Edwards, who's part of the University of Melbourne Centre for Cities, looking at night shifts in Australia and what we could do differently at our city and at our economy level to support night workers. If you're a night shift worker, I'd love to know what you would like to see. One person says, I used to do night shifts at a call centre. I loved going into work at 11 p.m. on a Friday to start my shift. Felt like all of Melbourne was taking a big sigh and letting their hair down, and I was missing the rat race. And another person just says, coffee with 6 exclamation marks, which feels like a good segue into speaking to Andrew Kopolov, who's the founder of the Gig Workers Hub in Melbourne, which has since closed and is writing his PhD on it. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to Life Matters.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What inspired you to set up a hub for gig workers?
So it was really a matter of just being out in the city and noticing the fact that people doing gig work, platform work, particularly people doing food delivery work, they just don't have any space, and they're sort of effectively taking up space on the footpath. And also, like Anna said, it can be very isolating work, both working at night, but especially working for these platforms as well, where you become sort of quite an individual worker, yeah.
What sort of things were you offering at the hub?
So it was really two kind of essential things. The first thing was basic amenity, so the kind of things that a lot of employees take for granted, like having access to a staff room, you know, with toilets, a kitchen, somewhere to drink water, these kind of things. Effectively, people doing platform work go without these amenities. So we had all of those things, but the other key aspect was it was somewhere for people to gather and spend time together.
So you actually worked as a delivery driver for a couple of months. It was kind of part of your PhD research. What did you learn doing that that you weren't able to learn from running the hub and talking to people?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I mean, as you say, I was doing it as part of my research, and there was a real difference between my experience of it and the sort of typical experience in that, for example, I wasn't reliant on this income for my livelihood. And, you know, there's a report done by the Mackell Institute in 2023 that shows that actually more than half of food delivery riders in Australia are earning less than minimum wage. So when you're having to wait for an order and you're not getting paid for it, that has quite an effect, you know. And my experience of that time waiting was quite different. But what I will say is that having done this work, I got to meet and befriend, you know, a great number of delivery riders. And that was really what gave me the greatest insight. So it was in moments of sort of having to go and pick friends up from the hospital when they, you know, low visibility at night and they ran into a curb, or going to visit another friend who was car doored, these kind of things. Yeah.
Wow. What other stories did they tell you?
Well, you know, every now and then you get hear about people being sort of disrespected by restaurant staff or customers, or just talking about, you know, there's a kind of gamified nature to these platforms. So there's a sort of constant encouragement to do as many deliveries as you can. And people just talk about sort of the strain that that can put on them. Yeah.
So the hub sounded like it was amazing, but it's closed now. What happened?
Yeah, so one of the great, I guess, qualities of the hub was that it was really worker-led. And what's important to note here is that the vast majority of people doing delivery work, as with rideshare work, they are migrants, right? And often young migrants who have arrived to Australia in recent years. So one of the great things about the hub was that it was other young migrants who had experienced doing gig work, who with their staffing space able to speak to their peers. So when people came in who were, you know, perhaps new to the country, new to gig work, they were met with people who had been through similar experiences to them, not only in the work, but also in terms of things like dealing with visa uncertainty and so on. Now, the flip side of that was that being run by precarious migrant workers, the team had a lot of other priorities. And that was kind of one of the main issues, was that we just weren't able to keep it going because of our own capacities. But then, of course, other things like issues around maintaining funding, sustainability of the financial model as well. Yeah.
I do want to talk about what employers or cities can do to support these. On the text line, Kate says, I worked day shift for 2 weeks, then afternoon shift for two, then midnight to 8 a.m. for 2 weeks for many years in a computer centre. I loved it. We were supplied with taxis home at night and taxis to work for the midnight shift. We were so well looked after. So, Anna, I'd love to know, we've got Kate on one hand with a pretty unsociable schedule but able to really appreciate it, and then we've got what Andrew's seen on the other hand with the gig economy. What do employers and cities need to be doing to best support folks?
Yeah, so I think kind of cross-sector coordination is essential. So I think kind of the city planners, the transport authorities, the employers need to work with the employees to kind of to understand kind of what the solutions are that are needed on the ground. As I mentioned, there's kind of a lot of governments or city governments in particular, have established 24-hour economy kind of models or strategies or put people in place to manage these. And I think we need to kind of think about night workers as part of those strategies and what they're doing, not just for hospitality, but as you mentioned, kind of for health, logistics, cleaning, etc. as Andrew mentioned, I think kind of not just for gig workers, but we need kind of safe rest areas, accessible spaces, things like toilets, amenities, etc., for people who are working at night, which perhaps kind of daytime workers take for granted. Improving late night transport. I think also kind of thinking about safety. So we have done kind of quite a bit of work with an organisation called Not So Hospitables, kind of looking into kind of, for example, sexual harassment in within hospitality, which is a huge issue. So there's so much that can be done. I think what I'd really like to see, and something that I personally found very, very useful, very interesting, was we spoke to 17 night workers who work in city operations at the City of Adelaide. And so they're the people who kind of sweep the streets and kind of make it nice for the next day, kind of look after the horticulture. And actually, I'd recommend kind of in terms of local councils that that people go out and talk to those people who look after the streets at night, because those people had a huge knowledge and understanding of what the streets look like at night, kind of who moves around the city, some of the challenges, and also their night workers themselves, so they can kind of give feedback on what they would like to see in their cities. So I think there's a lot of things that can be done. I think it would also be helpful to have things like health checks. So so government or employers providing health checks for night workers, considering we know that there are health risks associated with working at night, and I think also guidance on how to manage working at night as well. So kind of, as I mentioned, there's a huge amount of research that medical research that's I'm not a medical researcher, but yeah. Medical research that's been undertaken kind of to understand night work, and there's a lot of findings that could be used to support and provide better guidance.
Well, Anna and Andrew, thank you both so much for sharing your knowledge. Dr. Anna Edwards is a research fellow in urban studies at the University of Melbourne's Centre for Cities. Anna worked on the Night Shift Research Project. And Andrew Kopolov founded the Gig Workers Hub in Melbourne and is currently completing his PhD on it.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.